The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health. Today we have a really interesting topic, and that is Alzheimer's disease and the work of the Alzheimer's Association Hudson Valley chapter. And my guests are Erin Lynch. She is the Physician Outreach Manager for Alzheimer's Association Hudson Valley chapter. Erin has been with the chapter for 3 years. She has nearly 20 years of experience working for nonprofit organizations, including the National Down Syndrome Society and United Way, and she's worked and consulted for local and national and international nonprofit organizations. My other guest is Joan Carl. Joan is Community Engagement Manager for the Association Hudson Valley Chapter, Alzheimer's Association. Joan has been with the association for over 9 years. She's a retired IBM writer, editor, press representative, and also a retired PepsiCo Human Resources Coordinator and IT Associate. She's worked as the Associate Director of Admissions at the Oakwood Friends School and others. So welcome, Joan and Erin.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. It's such an important topic, and one that we've all heard a lot about in the news. Sometimes the news is promising, and we think we've forged ahead in terms of learning more about the disease and how to treat it more effectively. And then sometimes those hopes get dashed. But from your experience, before we talk about the Hudson Valley chapter of the association and what services it provides, can you offer our listeners a basic overview of what Alzheimer's disease is, how serious it is, and why it's spread, and who is affected by it?
Sure, I can take that, Vincent. Alzheimer's disease is one of the various types of dementia that occurs in people. Alzheimer's disease is the most common form. There's over 100 types of dementia. Excuse me. And Alzheimer's disease affects people normally as they get older. Age is the number one risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. So anyone 65 and older are at a higher risk. It does not guarantee that we're all aging into Alzheimer's disease. There's also early onset or younger onset Alzheimer's, which occurs prior to the age of 65. And some of those individuals are as young as 40s and 50s and early 60s. Every 65 seconds, someone's diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And here in the United States, there's 5.8 million people living with the disease. And by 2050, they believe it's going to, as we keep this momentum up, we're going to be up to 14 million individuals with Alzheimer's disease. And right now, with those 5.8 million people living with the disease, there's 16 million unpaid caregivers. So those are the folks who are spouses, partners, children, and sometimes even parents taking care of their children who have developed younger onset. Unfortunately, Alzheimer's is a progressive disease, and it's more than just losing your memory. It is the hallmark of Alzheimer's disease are the plaques and the tangles that develop in the brain. And we have 100 billion brain cells in our that are going on all the time, and they make up our thoughts, our memories, our behaviors. And unfortunately, those tangles and those plaques destroy those connections.
very, very serious and a big challenge for caregivers. So with that news, can you talk to us a little bit about the latest research regarding early detection and what steps people might be able to take, if any, to help protect themselves from this disease, and what are the most effective current treatments?
The association is very strongly supports an early and accurate diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. It's believed that half of the people who have the disease are not told of their diagnosis. We feel it's very important for physicians to make that diagnosis accurate and early. And there are a number of reasons why that doesn't happen. A lot of times people are hesitant to speak about their cognitive decline to their doctor, or thinking problems, memory issues, things like that, whether it's hard for them to report on their own self or have their loved ones report on them to the doctor. And it's very easy for people to brush off some things that they might notice in themselves as typical aging. Oh, I lost my keys, or things like that. And the association, we have a really great Know the 10 Warning Signs, which is a really great tool for anyone who might be questioning their thinking process to differentiate between what's typical aging and what's atypical aging. And that key example is a very common one. We all lose our keys from time to time. But if you start finding that you're putting your keys in the freezer or in the washing machine or some not normal place, that indicates that there might be more going on there. And again, it doesn't mean you have all Alzheimer's, but that indicates there's more that might be happening, and it's worth having a conversation with your doctor.
Mm-hmm. And is that exacerbated at all by, like, say, stress? Like, if someone is always multitasking, and I'm just curious,
absolutely,
and has a lot going on, is it likely that they'll, you know, sometimes I know, like, when I juggle multiple things and have a lot going on, sometimes I would have a tendency to forget, you know, something just slips through the cracks.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially in today's day and age with all that's happening, everybody's life has been turned upside down in a number of ways. And we're all scattered and doing things differently and multitasking. It's absolutely, yes, you know, stress is definitely a thing. And that's why we suggest, you know, taking a look at these 10 warning signs. And like I said, it doesn't necessarily indicate that you have Alzheimer's or a dementia or even a cognitive impairment. But it's worth having a conversation with your doctor, who might be able to identify something else that might be going on, like stress. Depression is a big one. Even a urinary tract infection can affect someone's, you know, thinking. It can affect how they're able to sort of process information during the day. So there could be a lot of other things that are happening. But again, a lot of people just brush it off, like, I'm stressed and it's no big deal. That's why I'm doing these things. So we just recommend taking a visit to your doctor to get it checked out. If you start noticing things on a long term, and those, that list is available on our website, which is a great resource to look at. Mm-hmm. So also, you know, that being said, there, you know, how do we diagnose Alzheimer's? There is not one definitive test that can diagnose Alzheimer's. A lot of times it is a combination of different assessments. There's cognitive screening tests and other things that providers can offer to patients to kind of see what's happening and kind of move. There's a number of things that you can move through to see, you know, kind of come up with a diagnosis or some form of it. There, you know, it can vary between, you know, those cognitive screening tests, and there are other options like PET scans and things like that, but those are not typically offered. So typically a diagnosis is made with those screening tests and a number of other tests to kind of rule out some of those other things I mentioned before. And really the best diagnosis comes from a team approach where they might see a neuropsychologist, a psychiatrist, a neurologist, and other specialists who are very familiar with the disease.
And without getting too deeply into the technical aspects of available treatments, are there promising ones being developed? Some breakthrough treatments that that people are kind of looking at to say, "Wow, this could be somewhat the light at the end of the tunnel."
Right. So right now, there's five drugs that are FDA approved. They do not alter, slow, or change the course of the disease, but they might modify symptoms. That's what's currently available. That being said, the Alzheimer's Association is funding a really great research study called the Pointer Study, which is a spinoff of a European finger study. And what this does is look at lifestyle choices. And so what this, it's a longitudinal study, and it's following people over a number of years to look at a number of modifiable risk factors. So what are there things that we can do today that might help prevent us from getting dementia as we age? So a lot of those are things you would probably assume. You know, we always say what's good for your heart is good for your brain. So good physical activity, nutrition, staying cognitively active, you know, learning a new skill, learning a language, mm-hmm. and even having social connections is so important. So that study is really looking at a lot of those factors to see how, you know, how those might affect someone's risk of getting dementia as they age. That's not really a treatment per se, but I think it's very important that, you know, if there's something we could do today to maybe help us as we age, that's very important. Also, you know, working along with that, the Lancet Commission, there's a number, they have come out with a total of 9 modifiable risk factors. And these include a traumatic brain injury, alcohol consumption, air pollution, education, hypertension, obesity, hearing loss, depression, diabetes, physical inactivity, smoking, and low social contact. So a lot of that is tied in very closely to the Pointer study and all things that we can, most of them we can affect, you know, change in our own lives, choose not to overdrink, you know, overuse alcohol, you know, make sure we're getting exercise, eating good foods, all of those things can be really helpful.
Good for health all the way around.
Absolutely. It's really about whole body health, because if your whole body's healthy, your brain is healthy. And it's really just about promoting that healthy lifestyle to keep yourself, you know, that will keep your brain going. It's not going to, you know, we can't say it will prevent you from getting Alzheimer's or dementia, but it certainly is something you can do. And the science so far has shown, you know, kind of encouraging results that those things might help, and it doesn't hurt, that's for sure. So it's definitely worth trying.
Sounds really great, and we want to learn a lot more about that and hear more about this, but first we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. We'll be back after these words.
At WMC Health, we know emergencies don't wait, and neither should our patients. That's why we pledge to see you within 30 minutes or less at Health Alliance on Broadway in Kingston and at Margaretville Hospital on Route 28 in Margaretville. Our emergency departments offer safe and protective environments and are backed by the full services of our WMC Health Network hospitals. Right there if you need more care. If you have an emergency, please call 911 or go to the emergency room closest to you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. And today, we're talking about Alzheimer's disease and the work of the Alzheimer's Association Hudson Valley Chapter. Our guests are Erin Lynch, who's the Physician Outreach Manager, and Joan Carl, who's the Community Engagement Manager. And Joan and Erin, before the break, we were talking about some of the treatments, some of the promising treatments, detection. And during the break, we talked a little bit about the number of drugs out there in clinical trials. It was pretty extensive. Can you just touch on that for a moment?
Sure, absolutely. So in 2020, there are 136 clinical trials currently underway looking at various types of treatments for Alzheimer's disease. And as I was mentioning, 80% of those are disease modifying treatments, which is looking to stop or slow or cure the disease. So we're really hopeful for that. And I know we see a lot in the news of treatments that are failed or clinical trials that are stopped. But I always encourage that for every trial that doesn't move forward to an FDA-approved drug, scientists are learning a lot more about the disease with each of those. So even though it might seem like a failure, it's really not. We're still learning more, and we're, you know, gathering more scientific knowledge as we go. And lastly, on the topic of research, I would like to mention that we run a really great depository or repository on research, the Trial Match program that we run. It's trialmatch.alz.org. And anyone can sign up to participate in a trial. There are, as I mentioned, 136 across the country. And they're looking for both people with the disease, caregivers, and healthy volunteers. And it's one way that we can all participate to help find a cure or a treatment for this horrible disease.
Mm-hmm. And there's this, you were talking earlier about keeping your mind engaged, learning new things. That's in the realm of neuroplasticity, is it not, where you're really exercising your brain frequently and challenging it? What do you think about that? What does the research show there?
I can take that. We have a whole program, Healthy Living for Your Brain and Body. Mm-hmm. So as Aaron had said earlier, there's a big connection between a healthy heart and a healthy brain. The more you're exercising your brain, the more new challenges that you're putting in front of yourself, you know, even puzzles and games and books and topics that are new to you, learning a new language, that will help create new connections within your brain. Now, it's not going to overcome Alzheimer's or another form of dementia, but it will help with the quality of a person's life. And so the more you're exercising your cognitive abilities and your social abilities and doing physical activity and following a good balanced diet, this may have an effect on lowering your risk. I mean, there are some things that we can't fight against because, as I said, age is the number one risk factor, but there's also genetic risk factors, right. There's a family history, there's lifestyle. So there's some things that we can modify and other things that we cannot do.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what the Alzheimer's Association and the Hudson Valley chapter do to support individuals and families and communities. You just touched on one of them. Maybe you can just describe what the chapter does.
All our services are free. So we provide educational programs. I do educational programs in three of our seven counties, Ulster, Putnam, and Dutchess. And these programs are presented to our constituents. And it doesn't matter if a person has an inkling about whether they have a form of dementia, specifically Alzheimer's, or not. These are good overall educational programs to take away that stigma that is normally associated with having Alzheimer's disease or another form of dementia. We also have master level care consultants, they're social workers, who are available to speak to an individual who may be suspecting that they have symptoms of Alzheimer's or another form of dementia. They'll speak to the families. In pre-COVID times, they would do it within our office, or even go to an individual's home if it was more convenient. Now they're doing it via phone, on Zoom, Google Meets, whatever is helpful to the individual and their family. We also have joint engagement programs that involve not only the individuals with the disease, but also their care partners or caregivers. And care partners and caregivers, you hear those interchangeably. Usually care partner is the term that's used when a person is in the early stage and their partner or their spouse or whoever is there to work with them. As the disease progresses, that role becomes more of a caregiver. So these joint engagement programs involve music socials. We have wellness retreats. We actually did a week of wellness retreats this past November for caregivers and individuals with early and middle stage Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia. Usually we do them in person, but we did a virtual one. All week we had folks coming in to do art therapy, music therapy, movement activities, and even laughter yoga. And we had someone do a cooking demo, and we took a tour of Italy. And it was great. And we had the Wednesday of that week was our all in Spanish. So, you know, we do offer those programs. We have caregiver support groups that have transitioned as everything else to virtual, either over the phone or over Zoom. And we have early stage support groups too that are available to individuals. Those individuals are screened by our care consultants to make sure that the group is appropriate for them and they're appropriate for the group, that it's not going to cause stress on either side of the group. So.
And do you do special outreach to underserved communities that might not typically participate or might have less access to technology?
We do. Fortunately, we're all involved with coalitions and committees. For example, I'm part of the Poughkeepsie Healthy Black Latinx Coalition, and we meet with other agencies, and those agencies serve the greater Hudson Valley. Some of them mirror the seven counties that we do. Others go beyond the seven counties. And we work and collaborate together to make sure that we are reaching those individuals who may be in a rural area, because Sullivan County, well, actually all of our counties have rural areas, and we also have urban areas. And depending on cultures, you know, some people will close ranks when they suspect something is going on. They want to take care of the issue themselves. It's a matter, I'm Italian American, so I understand that whole cultural thing coming into it and saying, we'll take care of it. So we fortunately, across the seven counties, we're all involved with coalitions or committees that serve the underserved communities within.
And I see from the notes too that you provide support for healthcare providers, right?
Yes. So that is pretty much what I do in my role. I'm the face of the organization in the healthcare community. Essentially, I work very closely with healthcare providers, and I cover all seven counties of the Hudson Valley. So what I do is I make sure that they are aware of all the programs and services we offer, and help, you know, make an easy transition, easy access for them to send their patients to us, who either have a diagnosis or a suspected diagnosis. And we have some great resources for them to do that. There's a rapid referral form with a signature. We get that from the provider, and we're able to reach out immediately to talk to that family and get them connected to all of our programs and services and also the support that we offer. And we also have a number of other tools that are good for providers. I mentioned earlier the cognitive screening assessment toolkit, which is great. And not all providers are well-versed in dementia or how to diagnose. So that provides a lot of additional information for them to become a little more comfortable with diagnosing. And we have a CME code and a few other things so that are really good for providers. So to help make sure that they're up on the disease. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And before we run out of time, and we always do when we have an interesting topic, how can listeners get involved, whether by volunteering, participating in events? I know you have some wonderful events, perhaps donating, finding out more. Where do they go for that information?
For our chapter, they can go to alz.org/Hudson Valley, all one word. And they can go to the tab that says Getting Involved, and that will show them the various events that we have. We have the walk that is our biggest fundraising event. We have the longest day, our second biggest fundraising event. But they can also work with the program team. Erin and I are part of the program and services team. If they want to go into doing educational programs. They can go on to volunteer.alz.org and they can see not only program volunteer roles, but also development roles. They can become part of committees. But we have community educators, we have community representatives.
Well, thank you so much, Joan and Erin from the Alzheimer's Association Hudson Valley Chapter. The work that you and your colleagues do couldn't be more important, and we are all very grateful for it. Thank you so much. That's all the time we have for today. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.